Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Associate Editor Skylar Jeremias. On this week's episode, we're discussing the stresses that practices and clinics face when trying to manage biosimilars, as well as some policy considerations that administrators should keep in mind as more biosimilars enter the market and more payers add them to formularies. Managing the growing number of biosimilars is going to become a greater challenge for clinicians, especially as more biosimilars for the same reference product enter the market and confusion persists regarding interchangeability, coverage options, switching, and biosimilar efficacy. Additionally, biosimilars may have different storage requirements compared to their reference products, and payer policies could impact the ease to which clinicians are able to dispense patients' biosimilars. Today, I'm joined by Kathy Oubre, CEO of Pontchartrain Cancer Center, and a member of the Center for Biosimilars Advisory Board. She's an expert on the administration and practice perspective of managing biosimilars, and has extensive experience supervising a practice that has had to adapt to the growing body of oncology biosimilars that have launched on the U.S. market. Welcome to the show, Kathy. To start off, what are some of the biggest operational concerns that practices are facing with regard to biosimilars right now?
Great question. You know, for most practices, the biggest concern is keeping up with the payer formulary status of each biosimilar for each payer. You know, except for the small payers, Medicare is really one of the only remaining major payers who still allow all biosimilars to have parity. And most of the major commercial payers place biosimilars in either a preferred or a non-preferred formulary status, and this status can change on a quarterly basis. So to accommodate most commercial payers, practices may need to stock up to three different biosimilars for a particular drug class. So practices need to have solid workflows in place when operationalizing biosimilars, you know, because the last thing a practice wants is to administer the non-approved biosimilar to the wrong patient, because then that becomes a cost recovery issue, and payers likely are not going to reimburse for that. And that becomes a very slippery slope. You know, practices can only afford to make those kinds of administration mistakes maybe once, twice, and then, you know, you start to go upside down because these are expensive products.
How does the management of biosimilars differ between oncology clinics and other clinics?
I think the biggest management difference between oncology and other clinics is, you know, frankly, the sheer volume of biosimilars we need to carry. You know, for example, we have 4 to 5 separate drug classes which have biosimilars. And if we are required to carry 2 to 3 biosimilars per originator product, you know, to account for those formulary management differences within our payers, then we could potentially be carrying, you know, 15 separate drugs, each with its own payer authorizations and unique Q codes.
How can practices mitigate the impact that prior authorizations have on biosimilar utilization?
You know, until we see broad federal and state, you know, gold card legislation impact the payers, prior authorization will remain a part of doing business. In our experience, though, you know, if a practice has solid prior authorization workflows, the authorization and reauthorization process is fairly minimal from a staff cost perspective when compared to the reduction in financial toxicity to the patient over the life cycle of a treatment plan when being able to utilize biosimilars.
How does the topic of reconsent impact how biosimilars are getting to patients?
You know, reconsenting patients is much more of an individual practice philosophy. It has been our experience that biosimilars have allowed patients to receive high quality medications at a lower cost share. So we consider reconsenting a part of the process for increasing patient access for these medications while reducing financial toxicity for them.
Do you think more practices should be looking into automatic substitution policies, especially as confusion around interchangeability continues to concern providers and patients?
You know, in my opinion, substitution policies are a decision between the physician and the pharmacist. You know, I can certainly see a time as comfort levels with biosimilars increase that practices do adopt automatic substitution policies. You know, however, I will mention that automatic substitution policies do not get around needing to obtain authorization for any new biosimilar, you know, especially if that patient's insurer does not allow for parity. And, you know, also, you know, the patient's cost shares will probably look different for each biosimilar since the drug acquisition cost rarely looks the same.
How can administrators and payers work together to make biosimilars and biosimilar savings more accessible to patients?
So biosimilars present some really unique opportunities for payers and practices to work together to increase access to care for our patients. Whether that's through preferred placement on formulary or lower copays when using biosimilars. And part of the conversation also needs to include the challenges on a practice level if the payer changes the actual biosimilar that is on the preferred formulary on a regular basis. You know, that type of, you know, behavior on the side of the payer can really present some true challenges to at a practice level, such as reauthorization, reconsenting, and, you know, there needs to be those conversations of how does the payer want to handle patients on existing therapies for existing biosimilars. So will they grandfather that biosimilar that patient is currently on, or do they require a switch to that new preferred agent? And of course, you know, there are also billing considerations since each biosimilar has a unique Q code. But I would also mention that biosimilars present an opportunity for practices to develop or strengthen relationships with employers or employer groups. You know, for example, we have started working with a few employers in our area to ensure that biosimilars are part of their, you know, that insured plan's formulary. And also, you know, there are some opportunities, you know, between practices and these employers to look for, you know, opportunities such as lower or waived copays for employees when they do use biosimilar products.
What can practices do to encourage biosimilar use, especially as we prepare for the launches of at least 7 adalimumab biosimilars over the next year?
Well, you know, I think it starts with physician education and that physician's comfort level with biosimilars. You know, because ultimately bringing any new drug to a patient is a conversation between that physician and their patient. You know, those are very trusted, sensitive conversations. So it starts with the physician. Then the biosimilar conversation, you know, extends to every stakeholder within the practice, which was our approach. You know, we started with physician education, then we did nurse practitioner education. But then we also spent a large time focusing on nurse education, because as most practices can attest to, you know, the patients and the nurses are really spending most of that time together in the infusion suite. And they probably have a more intimate relationship than necessarily, you know, with the physician, because they're spending a lot of time together. So we decided that the nurses also truly needed to believe in the products that they were administering to their patients. And, you know, they appreciated that and took that role very seriously. So we did spend a lot of time on that. But then we also spent time educating our financial counselors and our authorization teams, because they were the ones, you know, doing that original authorization or the reauthorization. Then they're working up those, you know, individual cost shares for the patients, and very, you know, and they needed to understand why we were doing this and the benefit it made for the patients that we all take care of, you know. And then additionally, in educating that team, you know, there are often phone calls between those teams and the patients, maybe, you know, to obtain financial assistance or have cost share discussions. So we felt it was really important for that, you know, those teams to be educated as well. So that as a practice, we're all on the same page in driving that same message about why we believe in biosimilars and what they mean for the patient as well as the practice. So, you know, We worked with our teams to develop and implement those solid workflows through the entire life cycle of the drug.
What tips do you have for practices to help them manage having multiple biosimilars for the same reference product?
Yeah, another great question. You know, first, we have biosimilars built into our decision support tool, which is linked to biosimilar payer preference within that tool and updated on a quarterly basis or as payer preference changes. You know, I will mention that on the physician side of that decision support tool, when they're ordering a particular drug, they're ordering that particular drug class. And then the payer preferred biosimilar updates on the back end, but notifies them. Then that treatment plan goes to our authorization team, who keeps running spreadsheets in their offices of all of our payers and their preferred products. So we have, you know, kind of two checks and balances already. Do this to ensure that, you know, our team is authorizing the correct approved biosimilar mandated by that payer for those particular products. Then we have pop-ups built into our drug inventory cabinet to ensure that, you know, the nurse or pharmacist is pulling the authorized biosimilar for that particular patient. You know, because the last thing a practice wants is to administer the non-approved biosimilar to the wrong patient, because again, that becomes a cost recovery issue and payers are likely not to reimburse for that.
And lastly, do you have any concluding thoughts?
So biosimilars are still in their infancy stage in the US, but in their short time here, they have proven to be a vital piece in lowering overall costs to the US healthcare system and reducing financial, you know, toxicity for patients, which I value, you know, a lot. But consequently, and because of that reduction in financial toxicity, and most importantly, you know, we've seen biosimilars play a vital role in increasing patients' access to care. So, you know, the biosimilar runway is expanding in the US with, you know, biosimilars for Humira, biosimilars for ophthalmology, and more to come for oncology. So it's really vital that practices and their teams and their providers work together through education and workflow development, you know, to integrate biosimilars into their practices.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about all of these topics. And thank you to our audience for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information on everything we discussed today in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.